Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, a weekly public affairs program that introduces you to the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Today's program over News Talk 1310 WBFD is hosted by Lloyd Roach. Bedford County Speaks is heard every Saturday at this time. Now let's join Lloyd for this week's discussion on Bedford County Speaks.
Thank you, Matt DeFazio, and good morning to you. Welcome to Bedford County Speaks, the weekly public affairs program of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Today's program is presented as a public service by Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, right here on Route 220 in Bedford. That's Thomas, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I'll return in a moment with today's guest, Wayne Langerholtz, who is candidate for State Senate 35th District, when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Sometime back, they did a survey and they found that lots of people who lived within a few miles of the Liberty Bell or the Statue of Liberty never visited either place. That happens around here too. Just after the start of the French and Indian War, Bedford County became the gateway to the West with the opening of the Forbes Road, which we now call Route 30. In 1794, President George Washington had to come here to quell the Whiskey Rebellion. By 1913, the first transcontinental road for motor cars, the Lincoln Highway, was dedicated here, and the legendary Bedford Springs Resort still welcomes people from all over the world. With this kind of legacy, why keep it a secret? Spread the word about Bedford County, the history, the charm, and the regal Alleghenies. Bedford County, America's open door to the West.
We are coming to you from Hebrews, and I mention that because we use their restaurant as kind of a portable studio sometimes, so the least I can do is mention that Hebrews is a good place to get a good cup of coffee. With us is a very interesting fellow who has arrived rather suddenly on the scene here. His name is Wayne Langerholtz, and he is a candidate for State Senate that has just been vacated by Senator Wozniak, who has an office right here in Bedford. So first of all, Wayne, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Lloyd, and thank you for having me.
You're not from Bedford. You're from the Johnstown area, correct?
That's correct.
And you went where? To school? High school?
I am a lifelong resident of Cameron County, Johnstown, Richland Township. Mm-hmm. I grew up and I'm a product of the Richland School District. Mm-hmm. Then went to Juniata College for my undergraduate degree in political science and then to Widener University School of Law in Harrisburg.
So that's interesting. So you majored in political science at Juniata, so you kind of had this in mind all along.
I've always been interested in politics and always interested in the law, and the two kind of go hand in hand.
How long have you been a township supervisor?
This October, I will have been a township supervisor for 14 years.
14? Boy. So you're, one, two, three, at least three terms there, right? 6 years in Pennsylvania, right?
Correct.
Something like that, Well, this is interesting because oftentimes people will jump into this thinking it would be kind of a cool job and maybe not know the full impact. So one of my questions was why you wanted to run, but I think you've got a pretty good idea.
Yes, I've always been interested in politics, always wanted to run, but never wanted to run until I felt I had something to offer and had accomplished enough within my professional career to be able to give something back. I feel that I'm at a point in my career, having been a township supervisor for 14 years and having been in the district attorney's office as an assistant district attorney for almost 9 years. Mm-hmm. I've prosecuted every type of case from murder to arson to rape to drugs, of which I'm the lead prosecutor for the Cameron County Drug Task Force. And I'm proud of the record that I've established in the district attorney's office. I'm proud of the record that we've been able to accomplish in Richland Township, business growth and low taxes that we've been able to bring to the residents. And I felt it was time and thought with a lot of people, did a lot of soul searching, and it led me to this race.
Did the decision by John Wozniak to leave office after over 30 years surprise you?
It did. As I said to many people all along, this was nothing about John. It wasn't specifically about him. I know John. Yeah. I've known John for a long time. He's a great guy.
Right.
He's given a lot, and he's provided a lot to the residents. It was just time that I felt as I canvassed the area, even preliminarily, if you want to call it like a exploratory committee, right, as some people may say they put together. People were ready for a change. They were just ready for new direction, new leadership, and I felt that I was able to give that to them.
Well, we spoke to John about a week ago, and he came to Bedford to attend a legislative breakfast. It was sponsored by the Chamber, And he seemed to be quite gracious about it. He said I was a state rep, and then I became a senator. And he said, you know, just enough's enough. It's been a long, long time. So he's almost suggesting that maybe like, give the new guy a shot and see what happens.
Yeah, we thank John for his many years of service. Right. He was definitely there for the district, and we thank him for that.
Well, obviously, the Republicans are very interested in you because there hasn't been a Republican in that seat in the lifetime of some people. So how do you feel you're going to fare? I don't know much about the makeup in terms of the party regulars and where they are in Cambria and some of the other counties, including the parts of Bedford County you serve. So what's your feeling on that?
Well, the district comprises all of Bedford County, all of Cambria County, and all of Clearfield County except for Dubois.
Yeah.
So it's top big. To bottom, almost geographically, you know, straight up and down.
Right.
And there's a lot of great people. We've met a lot of great people along the way. We've been doing this in some form or another for, you know, well over a year, whenever we really started to look at this race and get around and talk to the people and see, you know, poll the people, see what the interest was. And we've been able to make a lot of, meet a lot of good people and a lot of close relationships.
Well, do you feel that the Democratic registration is going to be a challenge for you, especially in places like Johnstown?
I'm optimistic that people are ready for a change, ready for a new direction. And we've seen that as we've been door-to-door in heavily Democratic areas, that people, though they may be Democrat, will not vote straight party. I mean, they'll vote for the candidate. And we were in neighborhoods that were heavily Democratic, and we were very well received, very positive, and they're ready.
I've noticed that around here that a lot of people do vote for candidates, and the whole notion of you know, straight ticket this or that is more of a big city phenomena than it is around here. I see from your promotional literature that you consider yourself pro-life and pro-gun. How pro-life are you?
I'm 100% pro-life and 100% pro-Second Amendment. Yeah. I have the highest rating from the NRA, as well as I'm endorsed by the Firearm Owners Against Crime. So I'm proud of that, and being a district attorney, I'm definitely against crime, and I'm definitely for the Second Amendment.
Well, I know the pro-life issue is tough sometimes, maybe not so much around here in Bedford County, but obviously it's a big discussion nationally, so some people aren't, you know, that strong about it, so you seem to be pretty committed to this.
I am. I am I'm Catholic. I'm very strong in my faith, and that's something that's important to me.
Yeah. Good. I think we need a little tutorial, and an assistant DA is a good teacher, so I think it's a good place to start. Tell us a little bit about what the Senate does. I mean, if you're going to be the candidate and perhaps the ultimate winner of the state Senate seat for the 35th District, how does a senator of a Pennsylvania Senate relate to its citizens? What is it? What is it, I guess?
I think anything dealing with politics, and especially within the legislature, it's a very unique job. It's not your typical, obviously not your typical 9-to-5. You've got to have life experiences and professional experiences that really lend you to be able to get things accomplished, get things done. This, I mean, you're obviously in Harrisburg, maybe say half the time, dealing with legislation, dealing with the budget, but you're back in the district because that's where your primary concern is, and that's what you're sent to Harrisburg, is to represent the best interests of the district. And I've had people actually jokingly say, well, you're going to move to Harrisburg now. I said, no, I'm not. I'm here for the 35th District. You know, it's about representing these people and their concerns. So you will be responsible for the budget, for legislation, and ensuring that the people of Bedford, Cambria, and Clearfield County are heard when it comes to the issues that matter most to them.
Because it's a big geographic area, and not everyone is the same in each of the places you just described. I'm relatively new here, so I don't really know that well, but at least from my own personal observation, Bedford seems to be very conservative as opposed to parts of Cambria. Is that a fair assessment or not?
To some degrees. Yeah. I mean, there are different issues throughout the different counties that resonate, but one theme that resonates throughout all three districts is agriculture and also less government. I mean, and we see that now as we're across the district in all three counties. It's the incumbent anti-government establishment that people are they feel out of touch almost with their legislators, and they're ready to take government back to the people. And I've said this, you know, all along the campaign trail, probably, you know, ad nauseum. Right. People pay your taxes. You want a good road to drive on. You want police protection. You want fire protection. You want a good school to send your kids to. I mean, that's it. Those are the core principles for what taxation should be. And that's what we've always, you know, adhered to within Richland Township, and it's why I feel we've been able to experience growth as a township supervisor. Is to keep the taxes.
One of my observations, Wayne, is I'm a regular attendee at the Bedford County Commissioners meetings. I just like to go. There's no other reason I go, not professionally or anything. I just go. I like to watch them do their job. And the one thing that pops up in these meetings over and over is discussion of state social services. And it just seems to me, from my own observation, there is a tremendous, almost over-dependency on state social services. And it seems to be getting worse, not better. Where do you see this ending? This just seems to be a money pit that no one seems to know how to stop.
I think that speaks to an accountability issue that we see, unfortunately, not only within this district, but within the state and within the nation, that people... there's not accountability anymore.
Yeah.
And we see that as we're hitting different Farm Bureau tours and different individuals within the farming community. They say, we cannot find people to pick our crop, no matter what we want to pay them. Nobody wants to do this work. Mm-hmm. And how do you change that? You need to make people less dependent on the government. You need to give people a stake and to give people an interest, whether that be through some type of ownership through a house or some type of housing. Make them invested within the community and find a way to reach those people that the community they live in is theirs and they're not just getting a handout from the government.
Well, that's an interesting way to express it, because a lot of people say, well, the people don't want to pick crops in a field or do that kind of manual labor because they can get something better. Actually, that's not the case, but they're already being fed by the government, so why should they go and kill themselves on a hot day and do that? But were the dependency not there, they might be a little more motivated to do it. Right. I guess that sounds kind of cruel, but I think that's maybe where we have to go to get this straightened out.
You need to absolutely break the cycle of dependence on the government. And by no means am I advocating eliminating social services, because there are many, many people within this district that desperately need them. However, I feel there are also many people that take advantage of the system when they're, you know, fully able-bodied and able to work. And they don't. And I see that as a district attorney with individuals that are in the courtroom every day. You know, what do you do? Well, I'm on some type of disability. Well, why? Or, you know, what do you do? There are people that could work but choose not to.
Actually, you're a unique person to talk about that. I wanted to talk about crime a little bit. And, of course, you're at the forefront of every day. You see all the people that are coming in being accused of things and ultimately convicted for their crimes. Is it getting worse?
It's not getting better, if I answer it that way. Yeah. It's a constant battle across all three counties, really. I can speak specifically to Cambria County, where I'm this is district attorney and a lead prosecutor for the drug task force, that we have, unfortunately, the highest overdose rate per capita in the state. Now, that's not a statistic that you want to be proud of or you want to tout. We have a very real problem, and that goes hand in hand with the state of the nation. The heroin epidemic and the crisis is a poison, and it's killing our children, it's killing our communities, it's killing people across, you know, all socioeconomic classes, and it needs to be addressed.
So a lot of people say, well, you know, it's the chicken and the egg. So which is it? Is it poverty causing the drug addiction, or is the drug addiction causing poverty? All the above, some of the above, just a wreck, a mess, you know?
I think it's a mixture of all. Yeah. I don't think you can point to one specific cause. Yeah. There are multiple contributing factors that are giving rise and that have given rise to this heroin epidemic.
As I know, it's being addressed nationally. We spoke to Congressman Schuster some months ago, and he talked about the opioids and how the Congress is trying to do something about that.
I was just at a training in Center County through the district attorney's office, a task force on overdose prevention, and 80% of all the opioids prescribed in the world are prescribed in the United States. Mm. That's a very sobering statistic.
And these are prescription drugs that they are used illegally.
Yeah. And lead to addiction with heroin. Right. And when then the prescription drugs have not become available, they turn to a cheaper alternative, which is street heroin.
You're listening to Bedford County Speaks over 1310 WBFD. My guest today is Wayne Langerholtz, and he is running for the State Senate, 35th District. And we're having a nice conversation with him about a little bit of what it's like to be a senator and some of the challenges he has to face. Before we went on the air, I asked him, why on earth do you want to do this? I know you have a strong public service interest, but it's a tough job. Everybody's gunning for you. You're going to be okay with that?
It comes to the territory. I know what I was signing up for, and I'm doing it because I genuinely feel that I can make a difference.
Well, speaking of budgets and things, I was just noticing before Wayne got here, it was published in the Philadelphia Inquirer, an article which was rather shocking to me apparently shocking to Wayne as well. We're both looking at it for the first time. But as of the date of the program here, when we're doing it, the state treasury has announced they're going to borrow $2.5 billion with a B, dollars from auto registration, lottery sales, and other special purpose funds. And this, to me, seems to be more of a symptom of poor cash management.
It goes hand in hand with the budget crisis that we've had over the past couple of years, and revenue and escalating spending and finding a way to pay for things.
We're going to be back in just a moment. I want to remind you that the Bedford County Chamber of Commerce proudly supports and celebrates the business community of Bedford County. To learn more, visit them online at bedfordcountychamber.com. We'll be back with Wayne in just a moment when Bedford County Speaks continues.
Hello, I'm Mark Thomas. Perhaps while driving around Bedford County lately, you may have noticed our current outdoor billboards. Stephanie March, General Manager of Thomas Chevrolet Subaru, knows better than anyone about our mission of total satisfaction. When we talk about our 7 ways to save, we mean not only are we saving you money, but also saving you some time and aggravation. Our attention to complete satisfaction makes sure you're happy with our vehicles and service, which keeps us happy to have a loyal customer. Our 7 ways to save is a process to ensure you have complete information to make the decision that's best for you when you purchase a car or truck. We encourage you to visit Thomas Chevrolet Subaru right here in Bedford and see for yourself why our goal is your complete satisfaction. Visit us on Business Route 220 north of Bedford or visit us 24/7 online at thomaschevrolet.com.
This is Emily Dermer, a volunteer at Old Bedford Village, and you're listening to Bedford County Speaks over News Talk 1310 WBFD.
Now, let's head back to today's Bedford County Speaks.
We are back at the Hebrews Coffee Shop here at Richard and Pitt Street here in downtown Bedford. We're just about a half a block away from the radio station, and we have a nice chat going here with Wayne Langerholtz, who is running for state senate. Well, I hate to bring this up, but the budget of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania has been in shambles for almost 2 years. They're now facing enormous deficits. I just learned recently that there is a pension fund deficit of $62 billion just for the pensions. Forget about fixing a road or anything like that. This is just to pick up the pensions for the employees and the teachers. How on earth are we going to get around this? There's no magic bullet, is there?
There's not. There's going to have to be a lot of tough decisions made with respect to reform, pension reform being one of them, and spending. And spending's got to be reeled in as well. But pension reform, absolutely. We cannot continue at the current rate without pension reform. We'll be bankrupt.
I was a private business owner for many years, and no one I know who has been a business owner has not faced this situation at one time or another. And I was in the radio station business, and I remember one year, it was one of those just awful years that you have every so often, and we had to go walk into the employees and tell everybody if they wanted to continue to work here, they'd have to take a 15% pay cut. And we were going to start cutting other things. We're going to reduce expenses until we get the revenue back. Do you think the state is capable of such a thing?
I think they're going to have to be. I think there are always ways to look at other sources rather than cutting. I mean, we still need to cut, and there still needs to be pension reform, but there can be other ways to increase revenue to make Pennsylvania a more business-friendly state, of which it's not. And there can be things done and policies enacted that can enable that to be a more business-friendly state.
Well, do you think that the Senate and possibly the House could go up to the governor and say, okay, look, we're serious about this. We need to cut everybody's salary. Everybody, even you, governor, you know. Let's do it. Let's just go for it. And then I think the citizens would go for it. I really do. I think they'd understand.
Right. It's that time. It's definitely resonating throughout the district that people are tired of the government. I've heard so many people that will come to me along the trail. Well, you know, Texas has a part-time legislature or this. I mean, do you know that this isn't what the founders intended, not specifically with Pennsylvania, but like the nation, that this is not – was not ever intended to be a full-time career, and that's not something that I'm advocating it for, but it's...
Well, if I may say so, the fact that they even have a pension fund to me, outside of the full-time employees, which are people like, you know, keep the air conditioning running, it's a little shocking to me that they pay pensions to guys like you. So that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Our guest is Wayne Langerholtz. He's been a good sport about this, by the way. I want to mention that to you. He really is. So it's not all bad news. There's some good ideas that have been offered over the past couple of years. One of them is the privatization of the state stores. How do you feel about that?
I would be in favor of liquor privatization.
I mean, the notion of selling off all the state stores and getting some money out of it, I think it helped the state, not only that, by putting a lot of private businesses in business, and they would generate tax money at the highest corporate tax rate in the nation.
Correct.
How bad can that be?
Correct. It's there needs to be new ways to think about the state, and there needs to be new approaches, and that's why I feel it's hand in hand with new leadership and a new approach.
I want to steer you a little bit to talk about some roads. As a township supervisor, I've been one myself, and I know what it's like to be at a township meeting and the person comes up and says, I want to complain about my road, and you have to say that's a state road. And then nobody likes to hear that. Do you think PennDOT's doing a good job? Do you think there could be some improvements there?
Yes, I think PennDOT is doing a good job. There's always room to look at things and see how things are run, but overall, I mean, again, that goes hand in hand with expenditures and spending, with respect to the roads. I mean, there are so many, the infrastructure within Pennsylvania is crumbling, and that needs addressed, absolutely. It's about putting what you allocate your tax dollars towards, and it goes back to what I had said about people paying taxes to be able to drive on a good road, police protection, fire protection, and a good school. Those are the core services that need addressed.
Well, it's the old bugaboo about where's the money coming from. I just learned recently that the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission has to fork over $400 million to PennDOT every single year out of their toll fund just because PennDOT needs the money to stay afloat. And that's another kind of dependency, isn't it? And they got to knock this stuff off. I mean, that's not the way the turnpike was designed to operate.
Right. Government needs to be accountable to the people, and you need to be able to go to your residents and your constituents, all senators, all representatives, as if you're spending your own money in your own house.
What do you think about the whole notion of schools being supported by the state? I mean, we had this discussion recently with the superintendent of schools here in Bedford County. And they're already talking about consolidating more schools, trying to reduce the overall cost. But I learned that we have more superintendents than any other state in the country. In other words, we have all these superintendents who are fairly highly paid guys. I know where I just came from, in Chester County, they paid one of them over $300,000. That's a pretty good gig for a government job. So. You think there's some savings there as well? Because I know Governor Wolf is all hopped up about education spending, but it just seems to have been observations of many that the more money we throw at this, the worse it gets.
Well, education is something that's near and dear to me. I have three daughters that are in 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, and they start tomorrow, actually, back to school. Hard to believe the summer's already over.
Right.
But at any event, education is something that is vital to our youngsters, and it enables them to be able to be in the workforce and be productive citizens that can then give back to the state. one issue that I've heard as we've traveled the district and talked to different educators, and my campaign manager is a retired teacher. I had him in school, and he was athletic director, so he's very familiar with the education issue.
Does he still boss you around pretty much the way it always works?
Yeah, sometimes. But that's one issue that has been brought to the forefront is, you know, proper allocation of those education dollars. And I speak specifically with respect to charter schools or mm-hmm. private schools. And I think a real long, hard look needs to be made with respect to some of those to make sure that the resources are being properly allocated and there's not any type of abuse, but that those are being properly allocated. And when anytime there's someone, and there's, and by no means am I advocating, you know, complete elimination of charter charter schools or cyber schools, but I think there needs to be some things looked at with respect to that to make sure that the every time a student would go to a private or a charter or a cyber school, that's money taken away from the district that they're within, and that's.
But
money
the charter schools within. Would tell you that their performance levels in those schools are vastly superior to the public school system.
Maybe in part. I've heard some differing statistics, so we'll leave that to the data.
Well, I mean, it's an important question because if they're not vastly superior or even superior, then they probably are a waste of money. But the advocates of charter schools and cyber schools specifically, in fact, I just met a young man that goes to cyber school. I never heard about it until he told me that he did that. It was very interesting. They did the whole thing online, I guess, because it's outside of the whole teacher union environment, so as a result, it makes it more, you know, makes it better. But you don't seem to see that that way.
I'll have to look at some data.
Okay.
I mean, I'm just telling you what I've heard from people within my district.
I think all people know about the district attorney's office is what they see on television, unless they themselves have been accused of a crime. And that's not a good way to meet the DA. We have DAs, obviously, in every county. Here it's Bill Higgins and his staff, and, of course, your staff up in Cambria County. I asked you earlier if there's been an increase in crime. You said, well, it hasn't gone down. So is the drugs driving the primary reason for small crime, like theft and things like that?
Yes, absolutely. Within right. Cambria County, you know, 80-90% of crimes drug-related, you know, mm-hmm. with respect to retail thefts, burglaries, even robberies, to go to get the money, to be able to go and get the fix, to be able to meet the drug obligation.
So with that in mind, is it the cart and the horse again? Is it better to spend money to try to keep these kids out of jail by having them go through drug rehabilitation programs or what? You know, that's been a discussion for 50 years, you know.
Right. Well,
about
there's
crime in general.
We'll never jail our way out of the problem.
Yeah.
There needs to be a multifaceted approach with respect to targeting, number one, the higher level dealers that are coming from out of state, bringing this poison into our communities. That needs to be step one. Step two needs to be treatment for those individuals afflicted by this disease, and I'll call it a disease.
Wow.
And third, education, even at a very young age, that people never will touch this, or never or be deterred from ever putting this poison in their body.
Well, you alluded earlier that a lot of it has this destruction, it's a result of the destruction of the family. It's the fact that if you don't have a strong family, you know, all this stuff starts to enter the door. Is that what you found as an assistant DA?
Yes, that's definitely part of the problem. And another part is, again, as we had talked, accountability.
Yeah. Well, Wayne, you've been interesting, and thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. I've enjoyed speaking with you and meeting you for the first time, and I wish you well.
I thank you.
Our guest has been Wayne Lagerhold. He is a candidate for the state Senate and a Republican, and he will be running for the office of the 35th District. Bedford County Speaks was presented this morning by Thomas Chevrolet in Subaru on Route 220 in Bedford, saving you time, money, and worry for over 100 years. I look forward to joining you next time right here on News Talk 1310 WBFD. Until then, enjoy your weekend. This is Lloyd Roach.
You have been listening to Bedford County Speaks. Listen each Saturday beginning at 8:30 to hear about the work, lives, and lifestyles in Bedford County. Bedford County Speaks is a presentation of the News and Public Affairs Department of News Talk 1310 WBFD. Thanks for listening.